Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, it's Nuala from the back of a cab in a Nairobi traffic jam.
Hi, this is Megan calling from downtown Brooklyn, wishing the Brian Lehrer Show and Brian a happy 25th anniversary.
There's been many, many more.
You're listening to 25 Years in 25 Days on WNYC.
Today, it's 1992.
This election is a clarion call for our country to face the challenges of the end of the Cold War and the beginning of the next century.
Can we all get along? Can we get along?
The end of communist rule brought new freedom to Yugoslavia, but with it came bloodshed.
He has Murphy Brown mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone.
So what you're saying is your mother and I shouldn't care if you get D's because you don't need good grades to be regular people.
Right.
Okay.
1992. Recognize the stories, recognize the voices. And in 1992, Rigoberta Menchú from Guatemala won the Nobel Peace Prize. The Oscar for Best Picture went to Unforgiven, while Unforgettable by Natalie Cole won the Grammy for Album of the Year. The Pulitzer Prize for Fiction went to 1,000 Acres by Jane Smiley. And these books made it to number one on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list, Revolution from Within by Gloria Steinem, Give War a Chance by P.J. O'Rourke, The Silent Passage by Gail Sheehy, Diana, Her True Story by Andrew Morton, Sex by Madonna, and The Way Things Ought to Be by Rush Limbaugh. Gloria Steinem and Rush Limbaugh making it to number one that year. It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC right now. Good morning again, everyone. It's our 25th anniversary series, 25 years in 25 days. 1 year per day, we're devoting part of the show to one or two things that happened then and follow up to see how it looks to us now and how it might still affect our future tomorrow. So as people are freaking out today about one case of Ebola in Texas, we acknowledge that one of the biggest health stories of the last 25 years has obviously been HIV/AIDS. Through the 1980s, people became increasingly afraid that sex with a new partner could equal death. Remember, sex equals death. In 1992, AIDS became the leading cause of death for men in America ages 25 to 44. Today, it has dropped to number six behind accident, suicide, homicide, heart disease, and cancer, a success story. Dr. Michael Gottlieb is a physician and professor at UCLA and its medical center. Back in 1981, he and his colleagues first identified AIDS as a new disease. He was Rock Hudson's doctor. Hudson died of AIDS in 1985. And Dr. Gottlieb was one of the three original co-chairs of the American Foundation for AIDS Research with Matilda Krim and Elizabeth Taylor. Dr. Gottlieb, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And Gina Collada is with us. She has reported on HIV/AIDS for the New York Times over all these years. Some of you may remember she became a lightning rod herself for some of what she wrote, drawing protests of her reporting from the Advocacy Act Up, Advocacy Group Act Up in the late 80s and early 90s. In fact, we will play a moment that took place on this show back about 20 years ago. Gina, welcome back to WNYC.
It's good to be here.
Dr. Gottlieb, take us back. Why did AIDS become the leading cause of death for American men 25 to 44 in 1992, 11 years after you identified it, and why is it only number six today?
Well, Brian, I think it happened largely because HIV kind of flew under the radar. It wasn't known to be here in the early 1980s, prior to the description of the new disease, and the virus itself wasn't discovered until 1983 by the French researchers, and then a test for HIV wasn't available until 1985. So there was a large number of people who became infected in the late 70s, early 80s, particularly as men who had sex with men became more sexually active, came out of the closet, and had lots of different partners. And so lots of people acquired HIV in the 80s, and that caused it to become the major cause of death, or at least a major cause of death in the 90s, in that it generally takes, on average, 11 years from the time someone's infected to the time they develop an AIDS-defining opportunistic infection.
And listeners,
and it's different today, of course, because of the new therapies.
listeners with HIV. Maybe you got HIV in 1992. How would you reflect on the changes to the epidemic in the last 25 years? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Changes to the epidemic, changes to the epidemic politics, anything you want to say in this episode of our 25 Years in 25 Days series. I actually want to play a clip from the 1993 movie And the Band Played On, which, among other things, tells the story of some of Dr. Gottlieb's early work. In this clip, another doctor makes an impassioned speech before AIDS gets its name.
Very complex and a highly emotional issue, but it would help
a lot. I wonder how you can expect us to be unemotional when at least one person is dying every day from a disease that doesn't even have a name. Now, if the CDC can't bother to come up with a name, at least it should stop the media from calling it GRID. We have enough people hating gays without having the entire stigma of this disease placed on us, especially since it has been shown that this disease is no longer merely gay-related. Now, I make a motion to officially call this disease acquired immune deficiency syndrome, or AIDS.
That from And the Band Played On, the 1993 film. Dr. Gottlieb, did that scene from And the Band Played On depict something pretty real from back then?
Yeah, it really resonates with me. The fact that people felt ignored, that it wasn't taken seriously, that federal resources weren't being devoted to addressing the epidemic. There was a lot of anger, and it was inappropriately considered a gay disease. And It clearly isn't today. I can understand that, and the activism. It causes me to reflect on the activism of groups like ACT UP, which made such a huge difference and are largely responsible for the progress that we've seen so far.
Did you come up with the term acquired immune deficiency syndrome or AIDS?
Well, the term was actually adopted by CDC in 1982, but it did come out in part from our paper in the New England Journal of Medicine in December 1981, where we call this evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome. I unfortunately will take responsibility for originally calling it GRID, which that speaker referred to, gay-related immune deficiency, but we were in a vacuum in Los Angeles, and all we had were five young men with pneumocystis pneumonia, and they were all gay, and we made the association. But pretty clearly from the get-go, HIV or AIDS was something occurring in the general population.
Gina, in your reporting for the New York Times, way back at the beginning, and I don't know when you went there, so I don't know if you were there in the early 80s. But you were working for, was it the Journal Science?
Science Magazine. Yeah.
So you
very
also
different
were
audience,
seeing it.
Though. Yeah. Uh-huh. Very different.
How so? And
because
how,
there's that was ahead. That was what the big difference was in coming to the Times. It's science. You write for scientists, and you report on what scientists say. And when you come to the Times, you're writing about everybody, and there's a different perspective on things. So I think that was part of the issue, because scientists, you know, people who were trained to do clinical trials said we have to study things in a scientific, rigorous way. And people who were activists or who were concerned about the disease said, we can't wait for you. You take forever. We're dying. Let's get things going now. And as a reporter, you can't be an advocate. You have to be a reporter. But I came from a world where it was all scientists. You know, you didn't have people saying, hey, excuse me, give me the drugs. I don't care. I'm dying.
And this is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Our Brian Lehrer Show 25th Anniversary Series, 25 Years in 25 Days. Today, 1992, with the hook being that was the year that AIDS became the number one cause of death for men 25 to 44 in the United States, with Dr. Michael Gottlieb, who helped discover the existence of AIDS, and Gina Collada, who reported since 89, as we just heard, for the New York Times. And so, Gina, along the lines of what you were just referring to, we're going to play a clip of the AIDS activist Larry Kramer from this program in 1990 in which he's criticizing you by name and a caller attacks him for attacking you, then I'll ask you to reflect on those days. And here's the clip as Larry Kramer takes it on the chin from a caller from Rockville Center.
Catherine, you're on the line.
Hi. I'd like to point out a couple things why I think Mr. Kramer isn't doing his cause a whole lot of good. I mean, when I read stories about how they personally harass reporters like Gina Collada or about ex-medical examiners, I think his name is Dr. Stephen Ambrose. I can't remember. And they camp out in front of his home, and they harass him day and night with phone calls, not just him, but his family and his children and the reporter. I mean, how is this really helping your cause?
Well, I think you've got a one-sided picture of it. There are at least a dozen drugs there on the market now that you would not, that people with AIDS would not have if it weren't for ACT UP. Children, pediatric cases are now getting drugs because of us. Women, people of color, children are now admitted to, I said all this earlier, into clinical trials because of us. We have street troops on the outside, and we have a battery of experts on the inside.
And what about the reporter? What's the excuse for
that one? Gina Collada is, you read, the New York Times is the most powerful newspaper in the world, and therefore the weight that these articles that she writes has is astronomical. And when
she
let me finish. I will tell you what she did wrong. She writes lies.
Can you like these? I will.
Let me finish.
All right, please do. You've been going on for quite a while.
It's my program, dear, not yours.
Oh,
actually,
well,
it's my program, but you're allowed
program.
To talk. Go ahead.
I'll give you a very good example. There are two treatments. One is called Compound Q, but the most important one. Hello.
Yeah, I think she hung up. Go ahead.
The drug DDI, made by Bristol Myers, is a very effective drug. They're much more effective in many instances than AZT, much fewer deaths than AZT. And Gina Collada wrote an article condemning the drug out of hand, saying that more people were dying on it than on AZT, which was simply a lie.
Larry Kramer and caller on this program, August 8th, 1990. Gina Collada, how do you look back from your perspective on those days and of being accused of reporting lies? At least you're smiling as I look at you.
It was a really difficult time, but, you know, I feel like I would... It's outrageous for me to complain because I wasn't dying. I didn't have friends who were dying of HIV, and I was doing what I still consider my job. I was reporting on medical research and what was required to show that something worked. And when you don't know if you think something works, people have been misled, including the AIDS activists, over and over again by things that it seemed like it's got to work. It worked in a test tube or something. We've got to have it. We don't care about the studies, and it turns out to be worse than nothing. Compound Q was a good example, so the one that he mentioned. So it wasn't. It was really not pleasant being attacked. But on the other hand, what I went through was really nothing.
And listeners, if you think that call didn't end well, listen to this one during that same Larry Kramer interview when a caller named Tom argued that AIDS was beginning to get too much funding and attention relative to other diseases that kill many more people.
What are you supposed to do about that?
Put the money where it belongs, with the more serious diseases. If the same number of people
would
die...
Would you get rid of this idiot? I don't want to talk to him anymore.
I'm sure you don't, because I'm talking facts. But if you take the same number of people dying...
Mr. Lair, you either hang up on him or I'm hanging up.
Tom, I think the conversation is very clear. It's understood where both of you stand.
May I just say one more thing?
Either he hangs up or I hang up, Mr. Lair. Mr. Lair, either you hang up on him or I hang up.
Every year.
One,
Larry,
two,
hang
three.
On. Now, wait a minute. Now, both of you, all right, we just got hung up on by Larry Kramer. Tom, continue.
Well, the same number of people die every 2 weeks of cigarettes every year as die every year of AIDS. And it seems to me that one of the things that the gentleman is doing is making a very big case for spending a great deal of money on a disease which is less important than others.
I think you were downplaying it way more than it should be downplayed. I will say, however, that I would not cut you off under threat of being hung up on by Larry Kramer.
Well, I appreciate that.
And if
sir.
He wants to hang up on you because you're challenging him, then that's his loss.
Okay.
Tom, thank you
for
your call. Bye-bye. John, you're on the line.
So I wanted to ask Mr. Kramer, is not there anymore.
So that was the tone of the time. That was the only time in the history of the show that we've ever gotten hung up on or walked out on by a guest. And I should say that during that next caller's call, Larry Kramer came back on the line and he said, oh, I didn't say I was going to leave for good. I just wasn't going to stay on with that caller who I objected to. So both on Kramer's part and on the fact that, Dr. Gottlieb, there was a parade of callers that day, mostly with an anti-gay subtext. At least one of those callers we heard there was also disapproving of homosexuality in general and other calls to the show before that day. So going after Kramer on these specifics was maybe a surrogate issue. But as I was brushing up on the history this morning, you know, it just seemed to me that there was, well, Gene, I'll give this to you, that you weren't actually the target. That using your name was just a really effective way for ACT UP to get at the Times itself and its approach to AIDS reporting that you were consistent with.
I think that they wanted, as many people do, they wanted us to be advocates. And we can have our own private feelings, but as reporters, we really can't do that. It's a conflict of interest. So we couldn't write the stories that they wanted us to write. We can write stories saying, here's what they say. But if we're writing about the science and the medical research, we can't take an advocacy view.
Did they influence the coverage? At that time, because ACT UP's own website, which I also looked at this morning, has a year-by-year chronology. And one of the listings for 1989 says, quote, Christmas 1989, ACT UP sends New York Times AIDS reporter Gina Colata a Christmas card zap to protest her inadequate AIDS coverage. Shortly thereafter, Colata phones ACT UP for specific information about the effectiveness of lower doses of the highly toxic drug AZT. A major article appears in the Times, and within weeks, the FDA cuts the standard dose of AZT in half.
There is no relationship. As a matter of fact, I wrote an article for Week in Review, which infuriated them, talking about how not just I, but researchers themselves were targets, and that some people thought that that was counterproductive. No, I was doing my job again. I was trying to report on what seemed to be an important issue. Do you really need as high a dose of a toxic drug? And the fact that I couldn't let the fact that I was sent really hundreds of Christmas cards to my home saying things like the blood of people with AIDS is on your hands, I couldn't then say, I'm never going to talk to them again. I couldn't, because I'm not taking sides in this. I'm trying to be a reporter.
And Dr. Gottlieb, from your standpoint back then as a physician and a researcher, did ACT UP open your eyes in those days to the way that new drugs were approved and priced? Because I know I was talking at that time to AIDS physicians in New York who, you know, were incredibly compassionate people and had practices that were entirely devoted to people with HIV. But they tended to be conflicted over wanting to get these drugs approved more quickly for the exact reasons that ACT UP was demanding it. And at the same time, you know, being worried that they were kind of in cahoots with the pharmaceutical companies inadvertently because their interests lined up to get things to market before they were as well tested as drugs generally are.
Well, I think, of course, there was some concern about that and some, I think, misplaced idea that there were sides in this. I think everybody wanted a good outcome. Gina, who I empathize with for having endured that, did her job properly. ACT UP did its job properly, although harassment of individuals is always very uncomfortable. The fact of the matter is that a lot of the answers in this epidemic have come out of industry and have come out of some collaboration of the activists with industry. I think the activists in 1992 were able to change the FDA policy, or at least influence it, to allow surrogate markers of outcome. In other words, in clinical trials, markers such as T cells or antigen levels in the blood rather than actual death from HIV as a indicator of the efficacy of a drug. Those changes happened. We didn't yet have the viral load test that came about in 1995, which is now the gold standard for efficacy. So I think it's an interesting story where everyone has played a role. There was some ugliness. Ultimately, the outcome has been improvement in care and prognosis.
This is our 25 years and 25 days, 25th anniversary series here on The Brian Lehrer Show. The year today is 1992, the year that AIDS became the number one cause of death in the United States for males aged 25 to 44. We're talking with New York Times science and medical correspondent Gina Collada and Dr. Michael Gottlieb from UCLA, who helped identify AIDS, really first identified AIDS as a distinct disease way back when. Tom Duane, former New York State Senator, former New York City Councilman, openly, maybe our first openly HIV politician, positive HIV politician in New York City, calling in. Tom Duane, hi.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. I really appreciate you chiming in. And, of course, you were on the show so much back in those days talking about these issues.
And I'm actually very happy that you are doing this segment this morning, this topic. I did immediately call. Of course, it's only the negative things that someone points out. And just generally, Brian, I hope you know I'm a fan. But you said that the expression was sex equals death, but the expression was not that. It was a button made famous by ACT UP, and we all wore it.
Oh, it was silence equals death, I know.
Silence equals death, and it was by, I believe, Grand Fury, which was an affinity group within ACT UP. I may be wrong whether it was Grand Fury or not, but there were groups of artists and various groups that did civil disobedience, subsets within ACT UP that did various actions. And
absolutely. In fact, we talked about the sex... The silence equals death button on the show just the other day, because it's one of the objects that Sam Roberts includes in his new book, New York in 101 Objects. And that silence equals death button represents that time in the 1980s. But there was also, as I recall it, this meme out there that was more informal, that was kind of representative of the fear that was starting to attach itself to sex in general because of AIDS, that was a sex equals death.
Well, it was in 1983 approximately when it was became known that the sexual transmission could be prevented by the use of condoms. Prior to that, it was various theories such as limit the number of partners, or there was a whole host of things. But the HIV really being the cause and that it could be prevented by using protection was a very major milestone. And I mean, as time went on, there were campaigns such as kissing doesn't cause AIDS, and unfortunately, people still then thought you could get AIDS from sitting on toilet seats, but you couldn't get it from kissing. There was a quite a curve in education. And then the most tragic thing of all is that today there's virtually no education that's reaching the new education, the new generation, and really they just get it from drug companies that show pictures of happy people taking drugs that weren't even thought of at that time that sort of prevent the HIV from turning into AIDS, as it were. But it was a very there was something else I wanted to mention about your discussion with Gina Collada, and that is there were so few people reporting on HIV and AIDS that anyone that did report on it became the center of focus, both negative and positive. However, and of course, that must have felt terrible for Gina Collada, and no one's reporting, like no elected official is perfect ever, and her reporting wasn't perfect, but she was reporting on it. I think it was also Larry Altman, I guess it was, at the New York Times, who did some work on it. But the other major focus was to get people to focus on AIDS, to write about it. There was a demonstration, for instance, by women in ACT UP outside Cosmopolitan magazine because of some terrible things they had written about women and HIV and how men were causing women to get it. It was just so filled with sensational mm-hmm. misinformation that there was a big demonstration outside the Hearst magazine building up on 57th Street. And there was even a very famous demonstration, Days of Desperation, which was desperation because there were no effective drugs coming out of the FDA, and ACT UP took over Grand Central Terminal and shut it down one rush hour evening. ACT UP went down with various, the New York ACT UP with various ACT UP chapters from around the country to the NIH to demand more action on getting drugs out of laboratories, if you will, and into the bodies of people because people were so desperate they were willing to take unproven drugs because there was absolutely nothing.
And that's when you take unproven drugs is when you think you have a very likely death sentence and there's nothing else that's been proven safe, and so what are you going to do in the face of those horrible choices? Tom Duane, thank you very much for those memories. And you mentioned the different ACT UP demonstrations. Here's one that was from that survives in the movie How to Survive a Plague, documentary about ACT UP, protest at FDA offices in Florida.
Tested drugs in Europe, in Belgium, in France, in Germany, in England. We are not asking the FDA to release dangerous drugs without safety or efficacy. We are simply asking the FDA to do it quicker.
AZT is not enough. Give us all the other stuff, if you couldn't understand that chant. So, Dr. Gottlieb, is AIDS still spreading today, or do behavior change and medical science have it on the run?
Well, of course, we see new HIV infections every day, 50,000 or so in the United States every year. Unchecked HIV transmission in sub-Saharan Africa and other developing countries, despite some gains. I think the elephant in the room is the lack of an HIV vaccine, which would make a huge difference for people at risk for HIV wherever they live in the world. And unfortunately, work on that has so far been disappointing. So some of the measures that have been instituted, Tom mentioned condoms. Yes, they have had some impact, but we know that 50% of the time men who have sex with men use condoms not at all or inconsistently. And so, yes, of course, HIV is still spreading with African-American, gay and bisexual men having a particularly high risk.
Is it harder to get AIDS stories in the paper today, Gina?
You have to have something new. And so, for example, the baby that was cured of AIDS, seemed to have been cured of AIDS, I should say, that was a huge deal. So when there's something that happens, it's going to get in. But it's like everything else. There are these news cycles. And when there was no treatment for AIDS and where people were dying and where it was the number one cause of death, of course it's going to get a lot more attention than the way it is today, smoldering along, still there, not going away, not getting worse, just there all the time. You can't just keep saying, it's there, it's there, it's there.
One more call. Jimmy in Southampton. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing all right.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you so much for covering this and Gina for continuing to cover it. It's an important subject. I believe that I was infected with HIV in 1981 when I first moved to New York with my boyfriend Frank. I had Shigella, which was an unusual disease for a 24-year-old man to have in those days, and they couldn't understand it. But I tested positive in 1987 and was told I had a year and a half to live. And and I turned to drugs and alcohol. And 92 is the most important year of my life because I finally made it into a rehab, Seafield, out in West Hampton, and I've been clean and sober ever since. As a matter of fact, October 4th of this year will be 22 years.
Congratulations.
But I had a group of 12 gay men who were my quote-unquote gay family in New York City, and every one of them is gone, every one of them. And Gina, I would love to say that if you're looking for a story that I would love to see covered, talk to Dr. Perry Halkidis. He wrote a book called The AIDS Generation, Stories of Survival and Resilience. My husband Brian and I are two of the 15 long-term survivors profiled in that book. It just came out this year.
Thank you. Sounds fascinating, or poignant, I should say.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jimmy. So, Dr. Gottlieb, is the forefront of AIDS research today, and you said vaccine. Is it a vaccine? Is it an out-and-out cure? How would you prioritize?
Well, I think both things are important. To some extent, I think the ease with which we have suppressed HIV with antiviral drugs has given people perhaps an illusion that HIV is going to be easily curable. I'm not saying it was easy, and certainly people who suffered throughout the 30 years while we were improving therapy thought it was an eternity. But I don't think personally that the cure is going to be all that easy. And I certainly would continue to attribute a lot of funding if I were a czar of some kind to vaccine development, which I think is the ultimate salvation from this ongoing smoldering that Gina Colata described. These anecdotes of bone marrow transplants and the babies are fascinating. They maybe lead insights into what might be required for a cure, but it's certainly not around the corner.
Dr. Michael Gottlieb from UCLA, who first identified AIDS back in 1981, and Gina Colata, who has long reported on it as medical and science correspondent for the New York Times, thank you both very much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was fascinating.
Thanks so much, Brian.
And that's 25 years in 25 days for today. Our 25th anniversary series continues tomorrow with 1993, when we look at the Giuliani-Clinton era in New York and America. Who can get the credit? And we go out today with Billboard's number one song of 92. Yes, it's Boys to Men. Said we